to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May I just set this in the middle of the table?
Are there agenda deletions, additions, or changes of sequence? Superintendent remarks prior to public comment? Are there members of the public that would like to address the board? Okay. The consent agenda. Are there any, the consent agenda are for non-controversial items that can be passed in one roll call motion. Are there any items of the two that people would like pulled from the consent agenda? Or are there questions from the board on the consent agenda? Are there any public items, public comment for items on the consent agenda? Do we have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, roll call.
Aye.
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 Who was the second
name? Okay.
That was me.
Thanks.
Excellent. Okay, so the first, Claudia is going to report on actions taken in closed session.
The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. Ann Neckes, appointed secondary co-director of curriculum, intervention, and assessment. And Brent Klein, appointed principal of Santa Cruz High School. Tracy Rainier, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing him correctly. Rainieri, appointed principal of Harbor High School. Miguel Perez, appointed principal of Bayview Elementary School. The Board of Trustees heard an update on GSCFT negotiations. The Board of Trustees heard an update regarding public employee discipline dismissal release complaint. The Board of Trustees conferred with real property negotiators. The Board of Trustees conferred with legal counsel regarding an existing litigation. The Board of Trustees conferred with legal counsel regarding an anticipated litigation.
Thank you, Maria. The first item of new business, 5.3.1, the Santa Cruz City Schools Week of the Teacher.
So I bring forth a recommendation to approve the resolution so that we can celebrate the Week of the Teacher on May 2nd through the 6th.
Are there any questions or comments from the public? Do we have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Dee Dee and Claudia. Roll call.
Aye.
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 You got them all. And 5.3.2, classified layoffs and reductions.
So tonight I bring for you to approve the resolution to reduce or lay off and reduce some of our classified services due to budget reductions, donation funded positions that have not, we don't have the money currently, or by program changes.
Mm-hmm. Are there questions from the board? Are there members of the public that would like to speak to the item?
Robert Chakalanka, president of the Santa Cruz Council of Classified Employees. I'm going to tonight a copy of the individuals affected by the layoffs, will actually not put the positions, and a letter of request that I sent to the district after the last board meeting where it was pulled, requesting a meeting and requesting, among other things, that some process be followed, that we need a process on this. And I've highlighted the things that have not happened as a result of the letter, and we're still waiting for that to happen. As the board is aware, in its earlier meeting, it approved $150,000 for supplies. And I've always been of a school of thought that we should probably take care of personnel before we talk about supplies. Because as you well know, you can give a child a pencil and paper, but there's no one there to give them the instruction on 4 times 8. It's not going to bode very well, unless, of course, they're used for art. So I've asked for these things to have this discussion. And basically, this is a process. That's what this is about. This would be, I wouldn't be here if we would have followed some sort of process to have this discussion. So we know this affects a lot of people, not just a few people this time. We'll see if it's okay. Now, granted, in the past, the donations have been something that they bring back people yearly. There's no guarantee of that. But given that there was budget money for supplies, this is almost unnecessary. We have some process of having a discussion because this now not only affects part of the unit, my members, but it also affects the GSCM team. Because these are people that work with teachers and work with children. And so I've asked them to follow a little bit of process before you go down this road and if you can give some direction to the staff, at least comply with my request. And also give it some thought. And these are people. I'm available to answer any questions that you might have on any of these.
Comments from the board?
I'm just seeing that so many of these are donations. So, and I'm thinking about what you said, Mr. Chakanaka, and that meeting that came forward, where the same people who make the donations for these classified services had asked the board to recognize that teachers needed more money in the classroom. So, though I hear what you're saying, I think that the parents and those who came forward helped make the decision to where they wanted the money to go. And for peace of process, you know, come early. This happens, we can start these conversations early in the years to start saying, hey, what is the school going to look like without some of these positions? And look for solutions that way. The governor's not giving us more money.
I quite understand that.
So, and I thank you for bringing it forward, but I do think that to paint it on the piece of spending money for classroom necessities that had been asked for from both teachers and parents is a little bit difficult.
Any other board comment? Oh, Sheila. Can you hold your...
back when you asked your questions, I had a question, and I feel like I probably ask this every year, but I'm asking it again because I can't get it straight in my head. When you're cutting these hours, are you cutting hours on a person, keeping the person, or are you, is
so
that what the person
is? This is
has?
About positions, not about, I mean, this particular paper right here is about positions. Of course, there's a person attached to these positions, but what we're talking about is the position.
But I mean, are you cutting parts of positions, or are you cutting?
Down here, we would be, yeah, reducing some hours.
So like the 0.6 or the... 0.25 you're reducing hours.
So you can look like a point of 5.0 to 3.0 to 5 hours to 3 hours.
Okay.
For example.
And does that cut people from, well, probably not because we have so few full-time, but full-time to part-time? Or is it cut, it just cuts according to?
So like this is 5 hours to 3 hours, 6 hours to 5 hours, 3.9 hours to 3 hours. On the back of the letter that Robert provided.
Anything below 4 hours is a reduction. They lose their benefits.
It's reduction in what?
They lose your benefits.
With those reductions, they lose their benefits. From 5 hours to 3 hours, they've lost their benefits.
People that have benefits, continuing
right.
benefits
and,
even.
Oh, I see. You've got the from twos. Okay. So, can I ask my number two question?
Mm-hmm.
And a comment to that is, every time I see instructional technicians, I really do feel like we are constantly hiring, so it always kind of disturbs me when we are cutting now. But I think it just gets me to Robert's question, and I have a question about it, which is, why not earlier have this discussion with the
We've had many unit. Discussions, myself and Kanae have, with the unit, and gone over why and how these are coming and why they're coming. So that has happened.
So why are you asking for it? She said it has happened.
The discussion started today.
Can we follow protocol?
I don't think this is appropriate.
It's really not appropriate to have an open dialogue across. We had public comment. We saw the letter. Let's direct questions to leadership during deliberation. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So why is Robert saying that he hasn't had the discussion?
So I did not bring in all these people that he wanted to for this meeting. It wasn't appropriate in a personnel matter. So, but we have had discussions, both he and I, mm-hmm. and Kane and him as well.
Jeremy?
I have a question, Molly. Sure. So I'm going to use your sheet. So the positions where funding sources donations, mm-hmm. is the expectation that come September 1st-ish, mm-hmm. when those schools realize certain amounts of money through mm-hmm. donations, that these positions are restored?
Yeah, it usually comes before that, actually. And what we try to get the parents, if they're going to continue to want this position, to give us a check now that will hold until July. We don't even have to cash it. But we've had one school do that, and so that position's not on here, but these other schools and programs weren't able to at this time. Most of them all get restored.
And that covers the ones that are under donations.
Correct.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, mm-hmm. 9, 10, 11. And then there are three that are special ed reduction. Mm-hmm. What happens there?
Because we've had a reduction in our special ed footprint. We reduced a class at Harbor, and a couple of other positions have been changed. So that's why there was a change in classified as well.
And one last question. Mm-hmm. And over the course of, let's say, the last 5 or 10 years, mm-hmm. Do we have like a 100% rate of returning these people based on donations, or occasionally do they not get returned?
I can't tell you 100%, but it's a very high rate of people coming back. It is a parent choice. So.
And by laying them off, they do qualify for unemployment benefits.
Correct.
Over the summer.
Correct.
So from a fiduciary point mm-hmm. of view, mm-hmm. it's... Okay.
And can I just explain to you mm-hmm. on the special ed, the only time that we can reduce special ed footprint, because we have a requirement by law to maintain something called MOE, a maintenance of effort, is when we are serving fewer kids, there's retirements, and those are the only times we can make reductions. We have been over-identified for special ed for a long time, and it's only at these junctures that we can legally make reductions, and we need to reduce our special ed footprint, which actually frees up money for us to be able to do other things.
Go ahead, Jeremy, and then Sheila. Mm-hmm.
I have a question. The last time we got numbers, our statewide special ed percentage is about 11 or 12, correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. We were at like 17. And almost up to 25% of our African American youth. Mm-hmm. So are those numbers...
They're coming down.
And where would you be able to venture a guess?
I'd hate to venture a guess.
Okay, but they're declining.
They're declining, and we can do a report and give you an accurate update.
I think that's one of those moments where if I could formally request a report on this, because it has implications, and in many ways it's very good news, because we've been asked to bring those numbers down and not over-identify. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would ask for a report on special ed numbers.
Would the board like that in the form of a report to the board, a formal report to the board, or a written report to the board?
That's a good question.
I think a written report.
Formal.
So I'm hearing one formal, I'm hearing two written.
I'm fine with written.
Whatever works, whatever is easier, frankly.
I can go the easier route.
Can it be included in the next special ed update?
We don't have one scheduled for this school year.
Okay. Next year would be fine. If we got a written report now and if there was any more information, we could just make sure that we include it in the report next year.
So can you, Beth, for the record, can you get that noted for us? Thank you.
Sheila. Why is this list so much longer than this list? What's wrong with me? This is the one that came.
We got updated.
This is the updated list.
I got the updated.
That's the one in front.
This is the one that's updated.
This is the most updated?
Yeah, that's the updated list.
Okay, because I took this one off Nancy's last update, I thought.
So, well, board pad was updated.
Yeah.
When we came back from break. And then
board pad was updated when we came back
from
break. The
board pad, that's what the problem is. Okay, so.
Yeah, they're all on here.
Okay. Why has it grown?
Well, the special ed piece is the reduction piece has come on there that wasn't on the original, I believe. I don't have the old one in front of me, but I think that's
there's
the difference.
There's only one special ed on that one. And there was only one donations. That's why I was sitting here trying to figure out what they were talking about with donations. Yeah, what happened is that all of a sudden you discovered there was a lot more donations than nobody was paying for. Is that my
understanding? I'm not sure. I'm sorry. But that is the accurate one that you have there.
Okay. So my last comment is simply that it's, in the end, it's your business how you do this. But after having gone through this a bunch of years, I feel like perhaps there is some other way to address the concerns of the union leader that broadens the, because it always seems to have to do with a larger issue. And I don't know if that is it, but, and I'm sure you've been thinking about that. But I just want to make that comment, that it seems like if it keeps being something that's bothering people so much, that maybe that we can figure out another step.
And I would echo that laying people off bothers everyone.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true, but, you know, it's come up a lot.
Are there any more comments? Do we have a motion?
Did you get that?
Thank you.
And
this is a roll call.
Aye.
And 5.3.3, summer facilities projects.
This is a follow-up from the last meeting's President Thompson, where we, Mr. Miller, on behalf of the MOT department, brought up the summer projects. And looking for the continuing formal approval from the board to continue with the projects that we presented that evening, as far as with the re-roofing and moving with the renovation of the athletic field and the lighting retrofit projects throughout the campus, utilizing our facility monies as well as our Prop 39 dollars across the district.
Are there any questions from the board? Public comment?
Yeah. I've got some concerns that I'd like to bring up on this topic. I've got to find it in here. Primarily, that would...
Let's see, okay.
Sorry for the delay here. I knew where it went. Anyway, primarily, it's the list of... the list of funding sources that are on here has me wondering. We've got the piece that primarily concerns me. Well, there are two parts of it. A lot of these projects don't seem mission critical right now. Thank you. You know, the turf fields probably wait until we see whether or not the bond measure passes. Some of these seem like projects that could wait. At the same time, you know, I wonder if folks are going to want to vote for the the bond when they see that we're spending millions of dollars on things like artificial turf fields that are not part of the academic program. They're not health and safety. They're issues that have been present for many, many years. The gophers are the big problem with those grass fields as far as safety goes, and those can be controlled. Fencing, grass turf, retrofit lighting, all seem like things that should wait until we have bond money, and are reasons why we would be going to the public for bond money. The big concern is the money that we're spending on these items, and the elementary and secondary redevelopment agency funds are unrestricted. They're ongoing. They can be spent on program and people. And I don't know why we would be expending these on artificial turf. The certificates of participation are debt, and we went with certificates of participation to build the old district office at the end of, the new district office at the end of Delaware that we had for a few years and then sold. But we took out a giant loan to procure that property and build that building and furnish it and carpet it. We sold it, and so the loan was certificates of participation, and I think we're still paying off that loan today. We've paid out of the general fund many years to reduce that debt, and this is kind of an ancillary point, but when we sold the Taj Mahal, instead of using the proceeds of that sale to pay off the debt, we built the new swimming pool at Santa Cruz High, and used those funds to put artificial turf on the Mission Hill campus and treated it like a low-interest loan rather than just paying off the debt, which seemed wrong at the time. And I hate to see us going back down this road of incurring debt and spending that money on things that aren't critical, things that we can't currently afford. I'm also really concerned that it doesn't say how much of this, these millions of dollars worth of summer projects are going to be funded with certificates of participation. How much money are we borrowing, and what is the impact to the district's budget? The board is charged with being fiduciarily responsible for the district's well-being. And here, it's like you're writing a blank check. You don't know how much we're borrowing and what the impact is to our budget. So, I might sound very concerned, because I am.
Other public comment? Board comment, deliberation? Anything? Jeremy.
So the certificates of participation are loans, and I'm wondering what the interest rate on them, let's just look at the Santa Cruz High football field to artificial turf, $1.4 million. It's loans. What kind of interest are we paying on that, and are we planning, if the bond passes, to roll this into that? Those are my two questions.
Mm-hmm. The first answer is yes, just as we did with the SoCal High School field renovation, which was done due to safety reasons. And the interest rate right now is being projected at 2-3%.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would get rolled into the bond.
Bond, based upon the language being provided. We'll be bringing forward as part of the resolution. The secondary RDA fund is our Fund 21, which specifically must be spent on facilities. The other RDA funds are already part of the general fund piece. These ones specifically came from the dissolution of the redevelopment agency as part of the whole agreement and negotiation with the state, which must be put back into infrastructure. Capital facilities is the state's term of Fund 25, which is a collection of fees from developers based upon their involvement, based upon the impact it has on schools. So it's used specifically for purposes such as that are affected by the increase in students at those affected sites. Prop 39 energy funds were funds that were applied directly to from the state, set up specifically for energy efficiency and lighting retrofit projects on behalf of the state to increase energy efficiency within the schools, and they must be spent within a 5 to 6 year period, which is why we signed the contract with Climate Tech. In conjunction with that would be the routine restricted maintenance. A lot of the function of the roofing was done because the roofs that were put in place were out of warranty, as were addressed by Mr. Miller at the last meeting. We were able to address half of the projects prior to the wettest winter we've had in years, which did minimize a lot of the impact to general fund roofing repairs throughout this year. We still had some, especially on our portable buildings, which we're attempting to address through the long-range facility master plan. So that will be that piece there. Deferred maintenance is Fund 14, which is also external of the general fund, which is also set up specifically for work and repairs to infrastructure. Capital facility funds, as I mentioned above, is Fund 25, which is developer fees. So the only portion where you see the box is certificate of participation. Similar to what we did at SoCal, the recommendation that we brought forward was so we didn't lose the liquidity of the RDA funds in case we had a major disaster. We've seen the impact of sewer leaks and gas line leaks and trying to maintain that liquidity in case we have an issue because we have a severely deficient facilities of the district.
Sheila and then Dee Dee.
Number one, I noticed that the certificate of participation caught me because it wasn't on the last. I went back and looked because I hadn't seen it before, so I really appreciate knowing what it is. I'm wondering what percentage of the football field is certificates of participation and what percentage is the capital?
The athletic field renovation, which is also used for our academic program, PE classes, after school engagement with students, being used for all the outdoor sports as far as that. So the portion of the 1.4 we feel right now is a high estimate on behalf of the architect. So based upon the percentage we're able to use from our capital facilities fund, I would say we're probably looking at hopefully no more than 1.2 million, which would put us on an annual payment, which can be done from our Fund 21 of about $160,000 a year. Which we then capitalize over the 10-year, which is about the life of an athletic turf field, versus putting the expenditure out all at one time and losing our liquidity.
Right. So and the idea is that it'd be paid off by the time we need to redo
Correct.
It.
And more so is the fact, as we put in the language and we brought up the last one, is being used with the advent of a general obligation bond, which we brought forth as a presentation at the next board meeting. Okay.
And I have another question, but I will wait till after Patty has a question.
My question has to do with the condition of the existing Santa Cruz High field. And if you could help me understand the decision that was made to replace this field as opposed to the Harbor High football, soccer field, track. I understand the softball field at Harbor High was done for specific Cal Knight purposes. So I understand that. And I have also been told that there are equity issues that now that we have the new baseball field at Harbor, we want to give Santa Cruz High a new field as well. The only difference is that the baseball field at Harbor is not a multiple sports facility. And this one would be. So if you could help me understand
sure.
the decision-making around
We'll go back to the one that's fresher is currently the multi-turf field at Harbor has also been used for the sports. It was used for some of the soccer programs during the winter months prior to baseball starting. So their teams did share the facility as far as that. Now, is it geared towards baseball? Absolutely. And that was a project that we walked into as administration prior to my arrival. So we completed that. The softball fields at Harbor High were done because the grass turf there was really very much worn down. It's also used by more than one sport throughout the time of the year, as well as PE classes as far as that. So by putting in the turf, it allowed us to expand the life of that program. We also went in and expanded attempted to strengthen the turf, the grass turf, on the current, the former JV, which is now varsity field as far as that, and clean up the area in the back there. So the purpose of that was, one is, yeah, to enhance the field, but also to increase the length of life of that field and the use of it for the district. Well, I guess prior to my arrival, Santa Cruz High School at the last renovation actually had a foundation put in for a turf field. They didn't complete the project. So when you're looking at converting probably a fully grass field to a turf field, you probably look at the $2 to $2.4 million range, because that foundation is already in place with existing plans. It reduces the cost to where we are estimating right now from $1.2 to $1.4 million as far as that piece there. That's one of the reasons why I was moved to recommend that piece to go forward. Also, what it does automatically is it opens up our relationship with the Santa Cruz City, where we have the exchange of use of facilities for Depot to offer to our other sites also to expand their programs to alleviate the limited amount of space that we have. Prior to my arrival, Santa Cruz High School's grass field was just the point of being red tagged for safety reasons. We have invested a amount of time to bring back the grass piece of it, but because of that use of it, for the length, the longevity, and the use that we have throughout the district, that was the recommendation that we made that we presented at the last meeting.
I'd like to just follow up, if I may. Mm-hmm. The use of other teams on the baseball field has been very minimal, mm-hmm. and I just want to point that out. Mm-hmm. While opening up Depot Park to Harbor High soccer teams will be appreciated, it is a hardship for those students to get from their campus to Depot Park, transportation. Those students don't all have cars. So while it's appreciated, there is still a great need at Harbor. So
absolutely.
I appreciate your explanation in terms of the price differential of putting in artificial turf at Harbor versus...
And in fact, Mr. Miller and I met with our architect just yesterday, beginning to shape some of the plans of the steering committee meetings that are set to begin next week on behalf of the district for the long-range facility master plan. And we talked about, you know, the notes that they've taken through all the general individual meetings that I had throughout the district. And one of the subjects of discussion that we came across was, in order to address some of the facility needs, we're leaning just early on right now as we go forward with these steering committee meetings. Do we address one campus wholly, whether it's elementary or secondary, and do that well to free up the resources versus, you know, doing a little bit here at every single site, which doesn't give the true economic savings we have. But one of the things that we talked about directly from district per point is, if we are successful with this, is one of the first smaller projects when you talk about, you know, $60 million, is immediately addressing soon, if we're successful, as next summer, the turf field at Harbor High School. But that would be definitely high on our radar piece, because it's used by multiple sports, mm-hmm. not just after, but also during the day as far as that. So we feel that would be absolutely a priority amongst the district, across the district. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Jim, you were saying that, and I'm a little bit, I just want to make sure that I'm clear on this, because Mr. Christian brought forward that the RDA funds can be used other than for facilities. And I see that we have listed the secondary RDA funds, and you said that was Fund 21, which is specifically for. So when you've listed the secondary RDA funds, are you saying that they are specifically Fund 21 funds? And that what Mr. Kirshen is speaking about is a different pot of money?
That's correct. As part of, I believe, what Member Schoenig requested at the last board meeting, Member Coonerty, was an explanation of taxes. So at the next session, we'll also have, as part of the study session, information on the supply portion, as well as the tax breakout. As part of the tax breakout, which is part of the local control funding formula calculation, which involves taxes and the revenue limit calculation from the state, there's also a set of those RDA taxes that are part of those particular calculations, but these ones that are presented in Fund 21 are specifically for maintenance and facilities. Okay.
And we have this much money within that fund at this point to move forward, meaning that we have $145,000 plus for these first two projects listed as secondary RDA funds.
Correct. Okay. We approximately sit, I can tell you just offhand, off rote, we have about $2 million in elementary and about $2 million in secondary redevelopment agency funds in Fund 21.
Okay, and then if I could just follow up. Mm-hmm. Now, in hearing Dee Dee's and knowing that because I'm near the Santa Cruz parents often and have been here at SoCal High, I'm not taking away from that, the field issue for the facilities meeting was huge. That was the number one driving factor of the 50 parents there, kept going back to that piece. So, you know, this inclusionary part will probably really help us move forward should the district go for a bond. I think we could use that piece as our walk through the community to what the district is bringing for their students that they feel is a benefit. But I want to know, in our city permit process where we rent these facilities now and we've helped our athletic directors with this calendaring, is there a percentage that is always going to be put to the side for the renewal of these fields and pieces of the district that are worn? Meaning if we're collecting $100 for a football field that's rented by me, is there a formula that we as the district say of that $100 immediately X amount of money will go into a fund so that when we get further down the line, we aren't looking to go into debt to keep our fields and our facilities one way, but that we have a savings plan ready to apply?
All right. So what we've done within the last year, especially with the increase in use of our automated system, we're now beginning to calculate all the funds, and they are now under a district code for all of the facility uses throughout the district. So, for example, in redoing the turf fields at Harbor High School, not every, believe it or not, there's a different mower for different types of turf, different types of attachments. So as soon as we laid the new sod over at Harbor High School, we had to go out and purchase an attachment that would go on the mower in order to extend the life of our product. And we took that directly from facility use rental funds instead of coming out of a quote-unquote general fund expense. So we now have that set up and we have that tracking piece to do. So all of our facility rentals go into a set area of which we're tracking that piece of it. And we're using it for that. We used it over last summer to go in and do the major cleanup at our two other turf fields that have been in existence, the B40 and Mission Hill fields, to go in and sweep, disinfect, and clean those turf fields that are, you know, have been in constant use throughout the community. That came from facility rental fee funds to maintain and enhance that project. So that is what we're doing now. As prior to the last year or so, it was done at each individual site. We're now coordinating that centrally through the district.
Okay, I appreciate that, but I think my question is just maybe one step forward, that we also have within the caveat of that fund a Fund A that sits for the actual because we will come to these large number projects in about a decade every time. And I think that along with just the maintenance, there needs to be a savings for the revision of it when it comes, or a piece, something we should be thinking about it. I'm just putting it out there. Thank you.
Well, I'm just so amazed that I was so brilliant as to think that I needed information that I didn't know I needed last time. So I don't, and you answered some of my questions, so I don't have that much more to say, but I'm looking forward to understanding the redevelopment agency better. I have to say that I had more of Barry's concern when I first saw this because I didn't understand the differential, which is obviously why I was so brilliant to say this last time. But I'm wondering if you could just say approximate, maybe it's too, maybe I should just wait till next time, but when the Fund 21 and Fund 13 that actually looked at infrastructure, mm-hmm. How much of the RDA funds are designated for that? At what percentage or approximately?
That's only Fund 21. Fund 21 is where we maintain the RDA dollars, the Redevelopment Agency dollars.
Okay, so it's...
Yeah, Fund 14 is deferred maintenance, which is a separate fund outside of the general fund.
But you said Fund 21 has to be spent on facilities?
Correct.
So the whole of RDA money has to be spent on facilities?
And these particular ones that we received, yes. And I also had a conversation with that.
Yeah, I'm going to clarify because you're not answering your question. Mm-hmm. Just, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There's a set of RDA dollars that are just operational dollars. And then there's a set of RDA dollars in Fund 21 that are just facilities.
So Fund 21 is not all the RDA.
No, it is not all of the RDA dollars.
Okay. I missed that part.
I'm sorry, that was...
All right, that's fine. I'll wait for next time, eagerly. And Jeremy.
What is the timeline for the Santa Cruz High School field?
We have already reviewed RFPs from our architect partners that have bid the project. And we just began to score those yesterday as they were the deadline. We did that also with our architect, our overall long-range facility master plan architect. So our goal is to begin that process as soon as school's over, shortly thereafter to meet the summer.
And end it?
Prior to the new school year.
Practice in August.
Mm-hmm.
Football practice in August.
Yeah. In fact, we had a meeting this morning with the athletic directors, and that subject came up. And already you get the camaraderie there. Mr. Walter looked at Mr. Brady and says, well, I know it's not, but we know that there may just be a possibility, you know, of sharing. But they also mentioned the fact of how successful the plan went last year based upon the steps that we took to select the vendors and to keep that piece going. So
thank you for the detail, too, that you gave tonight. That's really helpful.
Okay, there's no more comment. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Is this a resolution? No. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? 7-0.
Thank you.
Okay, so we are we're closing the general meeting and we are reopening the meeting as a study session. The structure of a study session is a little different. The only time that there's public comment is at the beginning of the meeting. So is there anyone who wishes to speak on the topic of the study session from the public before we begin? Okay, I'll take direction from you guys on how to go from here.
So we just want to start by thanking this whole crew of folks for being here today to support us with a study session on mathematics. I'm going to kick it off to Angela, and who will introduce Jennifer, and will introduce everybody.
A series of introductions, so thank you, Chris. I just want to reiterate how much we appreciate us and folks who come tonight. I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer to explain why we appreciate them.
Yeah, that's a good job. Yeah. Hi, everybody, and definitely we want to thank everybody who came to share tonight some of the things that are happening in our math departments and with our math program. We're working really diligently to build a math program K-12 that's balanced and supports kids throughout their education at Santa Cruz City Schools, and these are the people that are making it happen. So I'm really happy to introduce you to our participants tonight. Robert and Helene are going to be over here, and we're going to call this Station 1. They're going to be talking about our elementary programs and coaching and work on constructive conversations and member talks as part of our math program. We're going to call middle school number 2. I'm putting in the order of age. Middle school, we're going to call number 2 over there. Our middle school people here to share with you are George Martinez, our math coach, and Lindsay and Amy, who are RTI coordinators at both of our middle schools. And then finally, over here, station number 3, we have Steve McDowell and Robin Aston, one of our newer math teachers, and they'll be explaining a lot about the PLCs that they do in their department, and also about their intervention program for RTI. So what's going to happen is you have a number on your name tag, and that number corresponds with the station 1, 2, or 3. I feel like I'm on an airline. and so when we say go, you'll proceed to your station. And the first 10 minutes at each station are designated for time for the teachers to present. And so if you have questions, I think you have enough cards to take some notes on and to write your questions. During that 10 minutes that they present, they're going to have a lot of information they want to give you in a very short time. So if you could write down any questions you have or any feedback you have, and save that, Nancy's going to bring them as some sort of a lovely chime.
Fabulous chime. Thank you.
And she'll tell you when to pull on. She'll ring a chime at the end of 10 minutes. And at the end of that 10 minutes, then you can feel free to have a discussion with your fellow board members and also with our teachers about what you learned and if you have any additional questions. If you have a question and maybe we hadn't thought of the answer to it yet, we don't have it, we will certainly be able to get that information for you when you're done. So if at this time, the teachers could go head off to make sure there's...
Can I just add something really quickly? If you're here and you're not a board member, you are welcome to join the station rotations, but we're going to allow this time for the board to, because this is their study session, to ask to have conversation and ask questions at that time. So if you can save your questions for another time. And thank you all for being here.
Basically, the teacher was doing all the math from the board, and the students were watching.
And now, we can take some of the
If you have a curriculum that has all the other fundamentals that support and improve that learning style. This year, both middle schools have really focused on supporting students in their collaboration using using groups one of the things that I want to have and we're identifying with you is that I really start to look at our training and we're drilling down to who we are and be able to work this year with our district and start to look at the data and know what we want to do with these students starting right out of the gate. So we have a little data here for our incoming fifth graders this year based on the SMI. This will not be the scores that they have.
So they were fourth graders.
So this makes sense. Run our I-ready interventions, separate interventions from our teacher-led interventions.
Our numbers are a little different in that way, and our I'm almost done. Okay? I'm going to be pretty sensitive than I am here.
I'm like, you say bold.
All right. So, next year, again, we'll be running. Next year, we'll be doing a similar, keeping our eyes on the students, our younger students, in the more maybe possible way. Rather than be moving students during our SSR time,
So it's not going to drill down to the specific needs that they have in that class. The students that are on the IREG program, they take a diagnostic that tells them where they are in the geometry, algebra, and data algebra.
Well, it didn't actually start because you guys are in their
conversation. No, that was the so plan. Those students, we have a lot more information on it. What we have not been, what we need to get better at, we are using this data and the concepts. How can we now differentiate our instruction knowing what's in our
okay, folks, if you're not already onto your question portion, we need to start our question portion now.
Another thing that we're doing this year is asking the teachers of the grade teachers to tell us about those students, tell us who they know. Basic number sense. And just breaking down some of the skills we know have been a deficit for a lot of our students needing support. So we have some of those students that we're using all the different multiple measures that we're already identifying, and then drilling down to say, okay, this student looks like a candidate because he's a little basic here, has X taxes, you know, standard not met, you know, and looking at all these different things, and then being able to also go to a spreadsheet and say, oh, and this student also does not know what to see for X, does not, you know, is not proficient in it.
So it's like, we'll have a chance after it's over. Keep your questions written in your head, and we'll come back and do it. Somebody else is coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So with a little help from my friends, we disaggregated, I'll be presenting this, we disaggregated the data some more, and we wanted to see if I agree with it. And one of the things we see is that we're not seeing this kind of increase here.
The first year, we
I was more than relieved.
A little brighter on that side.
But so right now, Lindsay and I are looking at that data, coupled with teacher recommendation, coupled with grades, coupled with real discreet questions asked to our teachers about students, so that we are going to have a good experience to get inside the students that have taken in proper classes.
Once they visit this and have evidence, they visit that.
And they're In their math classes.
Sorry, yeah. In their math, yes. So all the math classes. Yes. Oh, sorry. Except ours, we have an algebra class.
One algebra.
And then everybody else.
We take the information.
And going into next year.
Well, you could argue that every grade six class is homogeneous.
They know what to ask.
Class and all the low achieving kids were placed. They were that's the way.
I love it.
Couldn't tell you what two times three. I've been worried about this kid every day that we had intervention.
I'm sorry.
Okay, we're going to start our next session.
And it was very different because it was a paradigm shift.
So this is a number talk, and this is a
world mapping that is very successful.
These are the math practice standards.
This was a complete shift, and then there's all been changes from my phase on a teacher
and they're off the track, and
Identify what the standards are. My sense is that it's going well.
And these are very fun to write, and sometimes they're challenging. And it doesn't always work as
what they were doing before.
This can be one of those things, because there's a different way to make things.
It's different.
And so it's the idea that...
It's a pleasure to walk into a classroom.
Things are engaged in many ways. You might think you ask students to make a choice, and then come together in a room, and try to work with good, and shift the opinion. And so it's nothing more than really a big idea here.
I should say, when it comes to having students... Because each time that you get a new teacher, each time that you get a new teacher, you need to rank this.
And so this year is not for the
test. They will have a horrible time trying to actually get their new rank, because it will not. It will not help the instructors or the rotation.
Students are exited from the intervention based on the IREG data as well as the IREG data.
the students are never stuck in what I have your question. They run for 8 weeks. Looking forward to next year, some ways that we're going to shift that we're increasing our internship time to 75 minutes a week. We're also going to have sort of 3 cycles of 8-week intervention for psychological skills. This is possible because now we have aware of where is that where is the disc and the HBO start right. And then also, this year, going into next year, we're going to continue with our IRE licenses and our students in that. We're going to also add a 6-week pull-out from our exploratories for students that are identified that need support in some remedial skills and also some And then we'll also continue with our 21% proficient at 1.9. Our SBAC score seems to be last year's score, so they're not current. The students are receiving math grade.
But that was a transition away.
Our SBAC is obviously 28%. Last year were essentially 30%, 27%, and 26%. So a little brighter on that side. But having this information coupled with data from the teachers on current grades, on graduation, and some real discrete questions we're asking teachers, how passionate is a student in multiplication and facts? Do they understand practice? And so
This is a very small glimpse of all the data that we're
meetings. It's just sort of to give you just sort of a slice of just what fifth graders look like.
Around that teacher all the time.
We're still doing that.
I think that would be good.
There is a meeting.
Thank you.
Everything's systems, you know? And systems change is big and slow, and it's a lot of we have decided to have a separate roster. So as of right now, students are told from their assessors, and it's difficult. Like, I keep track of all the students, and it's really messy. And there's also the added those things from your SHR, and they brought that to your SHR. So next year, Kevin will be rostered and enrolled. Some of the And we also have Spanish science being taught Spanish during that time. Like, just having that time to hold.
Everybody to the table, the presenters and the board. So if the presenters and the board can come to the table, we're going to have some kind of whole group conversation around the presentations tonight and also the data that was in that you were sent ahead of time. This is an opportunity to ask questions either about the data that was sent in advance or other data, or to have whole group, whole conversation for the trustees about, and question and answer if needed, about our mathematics continuum K-12 and how we're working to ensure that our kids are mathematically proficient.
Chris, I created, with the help of some very dear friends, created some additional data that I'd like to just distribute, and people could look at it as along with what they've got. I didn't make enough copies for everybody. If every other person would just take one. And at some point, I'd like to talk about it whenever you think it's appropriate.
So I want to offer this out to the board. This is your time, really, to talk. And we tried a different structure with this study session because we having less of the download time and more of an opportunity for you to talk about what you've seen and what questions you have. And you have resources here to talk about it. Listen.
I have a question. So how do we think this was all very exciting. Thank you so much. It was very informative. Bravo. makes me want to go start to do math again. I'm curious as to how we see this playing out in solving the repeat algebra issue. And do we have high hopes that this new kind of a new approach is going to make it so that we don't have that same algebra loop? The data on repeat algebra hasn't been very good nationwide. Kids don't pass it a second or a third time.
I can assure you that they're never going to repeat algebra except for high school because we won't have algebra 1 anymore.
That's basically very. Thank you, Steve. Basically, my question is: do we see the same trajectory, but now it's just going to be called Math 1? You know, well, or is it really a different?
I think that the program and the resources have been brought in, even though it's in the elementary or infantry phase. All the preliminary signs are that kids' attitudes are changing, and I think that's first of all that's key. Mm-hmm. Kids, their self-image is going to change about whether they can do math or not. Mm-hmm. And we're also pre-teaching, so that when kids go into the classroom, and I've seen this firsthand, where kids that have been through the program are saying, "Yes, I have this," and I think that's one of the first signs where kids are, you know, gaining more self-confidence. I don't think we're going to get everybody. Mm-hmm. There are problems out there that are not related to math that we're either knowledgeable about or can't address because they're bigger than what we can address in terms of kids' needs away from academics. Mm-hmm. But I think we're going to get a huge population that are moving forward.
And can I just ask another follow-up question to that is, where are the kids that have, what year, do we have a cohort that has gone through all 3 years of CPM in middle school?
They're current eighth graders.
Yeah. So that'll be a very,
data.
That'll be a
so next year, data. So it's going to be interesting to see, to follow that, those cohorts as they move into high school to see if we're noticing a difference from the strong CPM background from our two-feeder middle school.
We still will have missed the elementary, which is the one now I'm going to be excited about if I can live that long.
Well, I get to be excited about this one, too.
Thank you. So I'm going to... Jeremy?
Well, I think one of the things I disseminated, if you look at B40, on the handout, okay. Yeah. If this is breaking... The kids last year took the test at 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 11th grade level. And the first number is the percentage of students at each grade level who met or exceeded grade level. And the second number is for the total grade. So, for example, at B40 at the 6th grade level, 38% of all the students who took the test, the SBAC, met or exceeded, and 16% at the 6th grade level of economically disadvantaged, is what it's called, met or exceeded. But then when we look at the 7th grade, we see this wonderful increase. And then when we look at the 8th grade, we see the increase continuing. And so we also, by the way, see that at Shoreline. So this is a great sign. It's a great indicator. So these eighth graders are going to be feeding into Santa Cruz High School and Harbor High School next year. And I hope that this trend is corroborated by the test scores that we get this year. And if it holds, then we've got something that we not only know feels really good, but hey, here's the evidence, right?
So this is last year's eighth graders?
Yes.
So they're currently in, okay.
Yes, this is the 2014-2015 CAASP CASP test, yeah. Disaggregated. So it's interesting. I think that's a great ray of hope there. You know,
mm-hmm. Wasn't last year our first year of SBA? So this isn't really a trend
because
they're totally With the same one with test.
The same test. But the great thing is, the CST, you were not supposed to compare year to year. We weren't really allowed to do that. The test wasn't the same. The cutoffs weren't the same. The expectations weren't the same. With SBAC, they are the same expectations on a continuum. Mm-hmm. So we'll actually be able to look at sixth grade data that from sixth graders that go to seventh grade. We'll be able to look at seventh grade data and be able to say they grew. And seventh grade to eighth grade, be able to say they grew, whereas we couldn't do that with the CST. So the more years we do the SBAC, the better data we'll have about this, because we'll actually have year-to-year comparison.
So I want to also thank you all very much for presenting this. It's just fascinating data and information. My question has to do with the... I've heard about wonderful best practices, and except for the middle schools, the elementary and the high schools are not yet all on the same page in terms of practices. I know that you're moving forward towards adopting Common Core, CPM. Are there going to be opportunities for some of these best practices to be spread across the different, you know, to use what's going on at Bayview in the other elementary schools and assist those teachers as this adoption starts moving forward? And what ways are you going to be able to do that, given that you have only so many times of people right. and hours of our coaches, and they're already, I'm hearing, spread pretty thin, but our teachers are going to need continued and maybe even greater support.
I answer that pretty briefly. So we're in the math adoption process in elementary school. We 2 years ago started with our math coach and started to focus on something we knew would make an immediate impact, especially as we were moving to Common Core, and that was number talks and getting kids to talk about numbers and use those math practices. So that's where we started. This year we went on to constructive conversations with our teachers and still spread pretty thin, but we were also in this process of piloting a math program. When we chose what math programs to pilot, we focused on programs that would support kids through to CPM and looking for a balanced program, but also one that really encouraged talk and use of those math practice strategies. So we purposely didn't choose a couple of programs that didn't meet that, you know, expectation. Once we get the program, you know, it's definitely my goal, and I've already actually booked the dates for a couple of them, to come back for training, first of all, from the people that made the program, but also second of all, from this person we work with, Paul Bloomberg, to come back, not himself, but a math expert, and come back and really incorporate all of the things that we do as initiatives, learning intentions, success criteria, and to bring that into our math program. So really that the teachers can drive sort of the content of the math program toward the success that we're looking for in middle school. And then as our high schools, as we go to like high school, we'll receive these kids that have had a better, more consistent program. That alone will help. But at the same time, having RTI in the high school is helping to catch those kids that maybe didn't go to middle school or just didn't catch it for whatever reason, and really try to reduce that integrated math one, you know, repeat, because that's where we see kids get discouraged and stop trying, and we know that class is going to be a gatekeeper for graduation. Mm-hmm. So you really, I promise I won't sleep until we really get every kid to get through Algebra 1 or Integrated Math 1 in a year. That's really my intention, is to really make our programs consistent and support kids throughout their program, so that by the time they arrive at Integrated Math 1, they're already successful, so we don't have to worry about them.
I just want to add one quick thing. I think going back to the sharing best practices, the Educator Effectiveness Grant will provide a point to CPM coach at each site, and those three coaches will meet, if not monthly, maybe more often. And so I think that will be another way that they can share not only how they're supporting their teams, but what the best practices
are. I would say in our first year of implementation, the most powerful work we did in the sites was meeting once a month. And having that time, having the venue to meet, and getting that PLC time built in. But I'll also say we're two schools with five people in each department. So we're also a smaller group of people, so it was easier for us to meet as well. So any help in facilitating that PLC time and making those groups more manageable groups would really help.
There's also a lot of best practices taught by the CPM coaches. Mm-hmm. Right. And
And every teacher who's teaching in a grade one will get 4 days of coaching.
Yes.
And then 2 days during the year. And that was super, that was super helpful for the middle school.
I think for elementary, too, professional development is going to be on math. So they're going to be working together all year on not just implementing this new resource that they have, but also best practices as they go along. So I think that's another opportunity to share and spread the wealth.
Yeah, and right now the elementary is kind of you bought in and you volunteered, and it's wonderful, this constructive conversation. It's a wonderful tool for
students. So just before, there's a couple questions here, and before that I want to add, there's going to be another avenue too that is going to be a countywide avenue that we're hoping to draw in our feeder elementaries and middle and high school teachers as well. Several of these teachers are participating in the Santa Cruz County College Commitment Teacher Advisory Committee that's planning for a professional development grant that will be submitted at the end of this month. We anticipate we'll receive it. And this data piece is countywide data. It's not just Santa Cruz City School data, looking at how we address mathematics achievement across the county. And it is a countywide issue, and it's particularly an important issue to us because we have 6 feeder districts for our secondary program. So that collaboration and that conversation, how many of you are on that teacher advisory committee? Yeah, several of you are. That's a really important conversation, and Steve was talking about how that across districts we're working together on building assessments so that there's some consistency not only just within our district but with our feeders. That is really an important step for us as a district. And then it was Allison and Sheila, and then I think George had something you wanted to add. Or is it George, was yours on the same topic?
I was just going to add on the algebra forever topic.
Okay. So why don't you do that, and then we'll do this.
Which was the opening comment. I mean, thank you, Ms. Shoshone. You know, 52% proficient or better, it's really not enough to address. It's a giant problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very big. And by the way, we shouldn't feel special because this is a problem that's nationwide, throughout the state, and some places is significantly more acute than one we're experiencing here. But, you know, let's face it, 52% is, there's plenty of room for improvement. And the fundamental piece is for us to be able to identify the students early on. Kindergarten, I think that's what you mentioned, was it kindergarten? Along the continuum, where it is that they stumble and fall when it comes to mathematics, and intervene immediately. So we have to figure out within our system ways to address the needs of students as they move through our grades. And when we notice that they're having difficulty, we have to marshal the resources to make a difference. And I think that's the way we're able to address the math one in 1 year and out. I mean, and then and these numbers need to be hovering around 82-85%.
And we've seen this work with the RT at the elementary level with reading. When we look at our reading scores now, it's
precisely.
Like, when I look at the incoming reading scores for our next year's 6th graders, it's amazing.
And those have been the resources.
So I just wanted to make a comment about the importance of retaining our teachers so that every PLC, I mean, everything I'm hearing, all the best practices in the world, we need to make sure that every contribution that we make into the capacity of our workforce, we get to keep. So I don't know, I know that the board is committed to it. I know our leadership team, I just want it to be just this overwhelming commitment to make sure that we retain our teachers so that we build this capacity and we reap the benefits, not another neighboring district. And so along those lines, I wonder if you guys are in the field, you're meeting with teachers face to face. I heard one comment about PLC, is it Lindsay?
Yeah.
Lindsay, yes, thank you, there it is. About more PLC and more time for collaboration and teacher, is there anything else beyond those types of things that you think really could make the difference in terms of helping teachers?
Those are certainly necessary ingredients, I would say. They're certainly necessary. I don't know if they're sufficient, because the sufficiency side probably has to do more with other vectors like paying and so on. But those are, you know, right.
Things. And we did what we could to change that. So hopefully,
But you know, back again to that is teachers working together, collaborating, and talking with each other as to what it is that works, and you know. We did that the first year that we implemented CPM, and those were very, very valuable meetings. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the opportunity to talk about where we were stumbling and falling and how we could help each other to, you know, to carry the freight. So, mm-hmm.
So professional development, collaboration.
You know, one of the big things is release time. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult for math teachers. Mm-hmm. They don't want to leave their classroom. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about PLCs at different sites, they have different amounts of time. But at the high school level, to have an hour a week is really a luxury. Mm-hmm. Most high schools don't have that.
Right.
So when you are working on strategies and curriculum, there's only so much you can do each week, especially if you're looking at student work. So to build in days during the year, if we're serious about it, that's one way to do that.
Mm-hmm. What I was going to say, too, is that there is a limited amount of time. So if you want more time on one thing, then you have to take something else away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you right. Don't keep piling things on.
Things mm-hmm. on.
That's good. And, that's awesome. Thank you. Good. Sheila?
All right. So... She gets the whole system. I'm going down to the individual here. I found this to be a really profound experience today, because I was really good at verbal learning, and I made my way through math on my verbal skills and never got it until I was in my 20s studying for the GREs, and all of a sudden this little piece of my brain opened that I didn't even know existed before, and I... saw the spatial world, the visual world, and then it kind of closed back up again. My hope is that doesn't have to happen to other people, because I kind of got this idea that I have half a world missing in me. When I was over there in the elementary, I thought, oh my God, if these kids can get this, I had been worried that it was really a verbal system. The Common Core was very verbal, and it's only verbal by virtue of the fact we have to communicate with each other, and that really thrills me. So, but my question is, in terms of what I feel like I need to know as a board member, or want to know, and also as a human being, I would like to see some of this now. Over there somewhere it says, you know, the list of the things you have to do to learn, and the last one is seeing and doing it. And I'm wondering about a recommendation from those of you who do this. If you were me, and I wanted to see how this actually plays out, is it too soon to do that? Do you feel like it's something that would be helpful now? And would you start at elementary and move up through if you want to actually see how this plays out in the classroom? Because I feel like that's the piece that's missing for me.
Do you want to come and visit one of the classrooms?
I'm asking for recommendations about how, is it too soon to do that? Is it too new?
At least at the middle school, you can come to any mm-hmm. class of authority.
Nothing's too new. So it's been going on enough. Not in elementary so much, but yeah.
Well, Monarch's been doing all of this.
Yeah, Monarch's been doing it. Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter, Sheila, because it's wherever it is, you're meeting it where it is to see. So you weren't hoping for the growth. I mean, that was the whole purpose. So it'll just give you a gauge for whatever day you start.
Right.
So, yeah. Go.
Yeah.
Okay. Didi had her hand. Didi, I'm sorry.
You can also probably see some of the little video clips that
Robert has. We need a YouTube channel.
Library.
I have one.
Did you have a question, but I thought there were other people in line before me.
Did I see any other lights?
Yeah.
Okay.
So my question has to do with that kind of developmental perspective. I'm so excited that it's starting at the elementary school and it's starting to be embedded from that point forward. But so Cal is going to have students who come from these other feeder schools that are not going to have these wonderful CPM experiences either in the middle school or potentially in the elementary schools. And our current, so you're always going to have a group of those students that aren't going to have exposure to this kind of pedagogy and curriculum. And my question is, how are we going to support those students to engage in this kind of learning that is really drastically different than what they may have experienced in previous grades?
Well, one exciting thing that Chris mentioned is that S4C work, which really is a place where all of the teachers and the teacher representatives in the county have been able to get together. And I've already seen that build relationships with the math coach and the teachers at our bigger feeder schools, New Brighton and Shoreline. We've already had a meeting with them to talk about how students are placed and what assessments we use, and just asking questions. What program are you using? Are you going to integrate it? You know, what kind of a program is that? Are your programs aligned? And so that kind of thing is really exciting and will help us, I think, with that kind of communication. But, you know, in answer to your question, we're always going to have at least some students who come in without that kind of CPM experience. And that's kind of what the reason I think we have RTI is, because that model of addressing and responding to student needs immediately, whether they need to be intervened with or whether we get a student that's really above the level of the other students in their class, and all of the creative solutions that these RTI coordinators have been collaborating and working on together make a really interesting response that we've not ever been able to have before. So.
And I would also add that at both middle schools, since we use CPM, a big aha that probably should have hit us sooner is that we haven't taught students how to work collaboratively. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you guys have a rubric that middle school, not all of us know, the math department's using a collaborative work rubric from our work with Paul Bloomberg, and then now your whole school, they've adapted it, and their entire school is using it. Mm-hmm. So really using we can't just expect kids to know how to do it anyways. And so the best thing you can do for a student that's new to it is tell them, I know this is hard for you, I know this is different, and I'm going to help you through this. This is how you can do this. And make it really clear how you can do this.
And finally, to stick to the program, have faith in it, and do it with fidelity, because it's a specific task that each student has to do, and you stick to it. And, you know, within a couple of months, they're like that. Our sixth graders seem to have no problem adapting to the change. But then again, sixth graders are
18. Really? Brighton do have the same Common Core standards and the same math practices, and so they will be being able to, I mean, they're theoretically, the students will be expected to look at things from different points, you know.
And so it's just clear about the expectation. It's not just telling you the answer, it's explaining it. It's about showing it in multiple ways.
Okay, so I'm going to go, Jeremy has a question, then Deb, and then Sheila, and we're going to wrap at 9 because there's a bunch of people at this table have to be in the interview room at this room at 7:30 tomorrow morning. So
I'll do it.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Sure?
Mine just kind of piggybacks off the conversation about the SE4. So, and you mentioned that this countywide effort to look at math, but what's the County Office of Education's level of commitment and support for PD and things across the district,
So Mary Ann James has been really instrumental in and facilitating the work that's happening with S4C. She sits on the steering committee with the superintendents, and as the head of the Office of Instruction is coordinating, and she and a couple of the rest of us are going to be editing the grant this weekend. So deep commitment and a lot of work being done to facilitate collaboration and to facilitate, we're also talking about, as a county, having the same agreements about how we're going to place kids between grade spans. so that it's going to be the same placement process across all 10 districts between fifth grade and sixth grade, and between eighth grade and ninth grade. And there's everybody at this table is involved in different levels of that organization. I sit on the steering committee. Angela and Jennifer sit on, and Michelle sit on the operations team, and so does Kristen. And so we have representation of across the county, and then we have a teacher advisory team, and then we're about to begin an articulation committee with representation from each of our high schools, with CSUMB, UCSC, and Cabrillo College, to be talking about the transition between 12th grade and college, and what that means in terms of the shift to Common Core, what the colleges will be able to expect, and what the colleges are expecting from us. So I'm excited about what this collaboration means. It's really different than what we've done in the county before. And I know our smalls, the one school districts, the teachers in that are so excited to have this opportunity to participate on the teacher advisory committees. The one school superintendents are talking because they're getting to work with teachers at their grade level, and they've never had that because there's only one teacher at each grade level before. So it's creating some really exciting opportunities, I think.
Thank you.
Sheila and then Dee Dee.
Okay, one is just a yes-no question. So that means that they're also doing their assessments according to Common Core standards now at Cabrillo?
No.
So
not yet.
Not a short question.
Not yet.
So, but they intend to?
They're interested in, yes, they're interested in looking at what we're doing there, and they're talking about using multiple measures at Cabrillo for the first time, where they're taking our assessments.
And I guess the other question is that about, I was thinking about the 20%, between 20 and 30% of people who do not learn best in groups. They learn individually. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you see that and what you do with that when you have the kid who, for whom learning in a group collaborative model isn't working.
I think that if you're preparing students for the community outside, there's like the four C's, right? Communication, collaboration, critical thinking, creativity. And even if it's not your best mode of learning, that you still need to be exposed to right. those four C's. And when you're planning your instruction, you want to make sure that you're not always just having collaboration all the time, that you're having peer work, that you're having individual time. And so that goes into the teacher training as well, is how do you change the modalities of students learning so it's not always just group work. And I think that's a misconception that people have about CPF. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent answer, thank you.
T.
I have a question for all of you. How are our English language learners doing with this very different kind of learning, especially in math?
Well, it depends. And that is a function of where they are in the continuum in terms of learning English. It's the case that if a kid is, you know, fresh arrival and they're in a class where there is no support, they're struggling significantly. One of the good things about CPM is that their textbooks do come in Spanish. I don't know about the other languages, but certainly in Spanish. At Ramsey Ford, since I teach the class in Spanish, my students use the textbook in Spanish. That's what we use, and so there is that, and students can access the homework site as well, and it is in Spanish. So, but for other languages, it's a struggle, and you know that's a lot of the immigrant. You come to a new place, and if there's some support there, you take it. And if not, well, you struggle, and hopefully you get ahead.
It does give them a chance to practice listening and speaking, which is one thing, and that helps build their English skills quicker. Mm-hmm. But it's a very word-rich textbook for a math book, and so. Does and not look like the textbook I have as a kid.
Well, we're starting, I think, to really recognize that and knowing that we are designated ELDs to perhaps look at making time in those classes to really work on the language of math. Because the language of math, even exclusive of CPM, is its own language. And so really kind of focusing on that, using our teachers, our coaches, the coaches, to also find ways to help support our classrooms with English language development in math. And so that's definitely in our focus. We realize that that's a struggle for students, second language.
And by the way, the struggle that all students, English-only students, have struggled with the language of mathematics. Let's be frank about it. And CPM, the teacher's book, each lesson, gives you guidance on how to deal with issues like that and how to reteach and so on.
Really quickly, one feature of Illuminate that we have is the ability to look more closely at our demographic groups for the first time. It's easy. And so what Robert and I were just playing with Illuminate, looking at our Mars tasks, which are performance tasks that elementary students take, and we started going, well, who are you working with, and who's doing number talks in general? What school are you working with? What grade levels are you working with? And we filtered out just English learners, and there were several cases where English learners did equal to or better than students on our Mars tasks, and we could directly go, oh, that's because you were working with teachers who really took that to heart and who practiced number talks and who did collaborative conversations, and we can see the gap closing through our data. And the great thing is we can replicate what's happening when we know it works. And so we're really looking closely at that.
And just anecdotally, it's so easy to be an English language learner in a traditional classroom and just hide. Mm-hmm. It is really difficult to hide now. So not only is it very clear to the teachers that you need to support those students. So I think it works on both ends, right? So in a traditional classroom, everyone's getting it, okay, done. Well, now when students are expected to read and write and speak, and then you're realizing, oh, they need support in that, it brings them to the other way.
Did we get to everybody's questions?
Mm-hmm. All right. Wow.
Thank you all so much. Yeah. I'm going to say it one more time.
Thanks for bringing this forward. It needed to be discussed, and it makes credibility to what we're doing.
Target, and I said, as soon as they know, let me know, because I want to take that person to lunch.
So basically what it is, where the CLE is, right across the street is the Georgia building. It's the building right across the street. Okay, so right before you get to the opposite side of the street, it's the building just getting corner, basically, right before you're at it. That's your address.
I'll see you there at 6.
Okay. Exactly. I'll put on the calendar right now.
Yep.
I knew I couldn't talk to him while he was listening.
No, I can't.
I really like this job. It would be a conflict. But you raised it, so therefore I can talk about it. So glad you did. And
you should come and see the play. Or which play?
Yeah.
What is it? Little Mermaid. Molly directed it.
Oh, she directed
it? She's the director. And Emma's the assistant tech director.
Well, another reason why I got a call from Carol.
That was, you know, much
fuller.
What time
did
you say?
I told her I would say 10 times.
Eight.
Okay.
I
gave her a list of all the things I couldn't do, and I said if you could think of something that I can't.
Oh, the only thing she asked me for was 10 signs. She's like, if I gave you 10 signs, I'm like, I can totally do 10 signs.
Oh, that's good.
The library.
I was like, oh, don't call me and ask me this. No.
I see the emails coming up.
Call.
And I know I owe you.
You know what?